The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Did you know Fred Zinke makes mistakes? It's true. And not just adjusting for height on the doorknob. Many more on the fantasy side of things as well. We'll talk about that and my mistakes as well on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Fred Zinke, live from Wichita, Kansas here. Just got back from the Texas League playoffs where the Wichita Wind Surge lost, and the Frisco Rough Riders are now the champions in 10 innings. So good stuff there. Fred, how's it going?
I'm good. How was minor league baseball tonight? Fun to watch?
Oh, it's super fun. I love minor league baseball to begin with, and this experience was really cool.
I've never been to a minor league baseball game. That's
really?
Yeah, well,
why would you? You're in Toronto.
Yeah, exactly. Right? There's just not a lot of my. There used to be one in Ottawa, about 3 or 4 hours from here. I never went to a game. Hasn't been there for many years now. So, yeah, never been to a minor league. Been to lots of minor hockey league games, things like that, but never a minor league baseball game.
Well, I had a new experience. I was actually there when a team clinched a championship.
Okay.
And went nuts on the field. It was the visiting team, no less, but it was still really cool. I've seen it, you know, I've been a part of, you know, when in our little leagues and things like that, seeing like a professional championship celebrated on the field from like the second row, really pretty cool. That's sitting awesome. Right next to the visitors' dugout. Good stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah. At any level of baseball, that would be fun.
Yeah. And Wichita's got a gem of a ballpark, Riverfront Stadium. It's two words. Not to be confused with Cincinnati's Riverfront Stadium. You could never confuse the two. It's a gem. It's a pretty little ballpark there. It's like 3 or 4 years old. Really good stuff. Really enjoyed that. It was a good way to spend a Tuesday night. That's for sure. Nice.
Sounds good. I'll have to get to a minor league baseball game someday in retirement. That'll be a bucket list retirement thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on right now. I'm trying to think about that. I'm only a couple of years away from the kids going to college. I wouldn't wait till retirement. I think that's maybe like a kids are in college sort of thing. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's synonymous for you. I don't know, but yeah. We'll see. All right. This week, we're not going to do the what's news in baseball. You can read rotowire.com. If you don't already subscribe to RotoWire, see it right here, rotowire.com/try. Get yourself that free trial. No credit card is required. You can read all of our latest news and what it means and all that. We are, on the other hand, we're going to go a little big topic here. We're going to talk about our top five mistakes of the year. I didn't tell you you're going to have to list them 1 through 5. We're just going to talk about our top mistakes, really. But hey, SEO stuff there. So top five it is. But all right, let's talk about our top mistakes this year, because we all make them. We have our good leagues and our bad leagues. Sometimes it's you don't want to get too tied up into the actual results of a team, but yeah, it's usually a pretty good proxy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And figuring out, our top mistakes, I don't know, you can make a lot of mistakes and still win your league. Right. But so much of it. Yeah. Sometimes you just make too many. Some of them are not recoverable or hard to recover from. I still think figuring out where you went wrong at the around this time of the year is probably the most valuable thing you can do, because you know, truthfully, if all your picks could just hold serve, and not, they don't have to be great, if all your picks held serve, you'd have a really, really good team. That's really hard to pull off. So, but that's the goal, I think. I mean, having some Julio Rodriguez on your team is amazing. But just if all your picks, honestly, if all your picks just meet expectations or come close to expectations, you'll have a really good team. So figuring out the picks or the common picks, if you have many teams like you and I do, figuring out common threads amongst your team of where things went wrong, even on teams that were successful, I think is a really good starting point for your drafts for the next year.
Some of my best received columns are the ones like, okay, what went wrong? Is there a systemic problem or is it just a player selection problem? Yeah. Was it a strategy thing? Is there something you overlooked? Like traditionally for years, I undervalue speed. I think I still might a little bit there, because if you do, like you and I do, we do, standing gains points for projections for values. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes that it's easy to underrate the saves and stolen bases because they're singular categories that are unrelated to any other category. I mean, there's some correlation that top closers have good ratios and, better strikeouts than other relievers. But, likewise, top stolen base guys are usually scoring a decent amount of runs, not always. But they, for the most part, these guys, they're here for one reason, to do those two particular categories. So they're not going to show up in overall values as well.
That's right. And if you use the SGPs, it'll depend how you weight those categories. Do you choose to artificially weight them a little heavier so you're more competitive in those categories? And to play the draft room and against ADP, because especially if you're going in big contests, you need some of those categories. Even if you're not going into big contests, you're not going to double punt saves and steals, right? So you have to be competitive in those categories. So it's figuring out how you want to weight them in comparison to ADP so that you are competing in those categories. You don't want to go overboard, but how you attack them. And some of my mistakes this year as we start to delve into them will be related to those particular categories.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Happens all the time. So let's talk mistake number one. What is one big mistake that you, Fred Zinke, have made?
Yeah, so one that I think I'm going to learn from is one Mr. Whit Merrifield. I drafted him in, not everywhere or anything, but I drafted him in many places. I had him ranked very competitively, I'd say higher than his ADP. So I probably took him a lot if I was near the 2-3 turn in a 15 team league, or maybe mid third in a 12 team league. And Merrifield has been very disappointing. He's hitting, going into tonight, he's hitting .235 with 10 homers and 16 steals. So I was looking for, he got 40 steals last year. The rationale was, he was consistently throughout his career a high average hitter, right? He was .277 had been his worst batting average in a season going into this year. And he steals bases. He had 40 last year. So the thinking on my part was, if he could even get 30 and be his usual, .280 type, his career's average is still .284. If he could be that type of a hitter, then I'd be fine. His OPS, though, in his career is typically, outside of a couple of years, is pretty low. Last year, it had been 7-11, which is pretty poor. I think the lesson learned for me here is just beware players in the early rounds as foundational pieces who just aren't really that good of an actual player. right? So, I mean,
seems like that's such a truism, but when you think about it, you know what you're saying, but you know what I'm saying? Draft good players.
And I mean, it's not like he had back-to-back years in 2018 and 2019 where he had an OPS over 800. And if you can get a steals guy with an OPS over 800, that's good. But that hadn't been him really the last couple of years. What really killed him, he got off to a really slow start this year. That hurt him a lot. Then he was kind of Whit Merrifield for a little while. But then the fact that he's not a very good player meant that at the trade deadline, which I didn't really see coming and people weren't really talking about prior to the season, but at the trade deadline, the Royals were fine with parting with him because, again, he's not a really good player to help an actual baseball team. And then the teams looking at him, like the Blue Jays, don't necessarily look at him as a full-time player because of the way he's playing. And then so with the Jays, he's been kind of in and out of the lineup. It's not really about Whit Merrifield in particular. For me, the lesson is, beware speed guys early on who just aren't great players. For example, I took Ahmed Rosario in the middle rounds of some drafts. He's turned out fine, but the acquisition cost there was more reasonable. We were talking about maybe my 11th round pick or something like that if it hadn't really worked out. Whereas Whit Merrifield was typically my third round pick when I selected him.
Yeah, yeah. And the second, beginning of third is typically where he went. And
yeah,
it's a lot of draft capital for a specialist. And if there's that, and that's the problem, is like if he tapers off, you know, then all the category juice goes away. And that's been tricky.
I mean, yeah, I mean, like, I look at his stat lines, I'm like, okay, I can see what I was thinking. Like, he scored 97 runs last year. Mm-hmm. You know, he, like, that was the whole thought, is he's always a high average hitter. He always hits high in the lineup. But again, expecting a guy who's not a top overall real life player to continue to hit leadoff or second in a lineup, that was always kind of like a Royals thing. They just overlooked the fact that his on base percentages weren't often that great and hit him high in the lineup anyways. But, you know, there was always that potential there. Like, we talked about, like, a range of outcomes, right? Like, once he just went to the little bit south side of his range of outcomes, all of a sudden that OBP is not even 300, and they just can't keep him high in the lineup. And now he's hitting at the bottom of the lineup or not playing at all. It's just like, it's the margin of error for a player like that. So, I mean, to put it in perspective, and this will sound incredibly foolish, and a lot of us did this, like, he was selected ahead of Aaron Judge in a lot of leagues.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Aaron Judge went to Scott Genstad at pick 60 in one league, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
That's just insane. But, yeah, you know, it's just illustrative of how bad it can, you know, how bad that can be. I mean, that's just like the worst case scenario, obviously. So there you go. I'll say my first one, and I'm looking through my NFBC universe leagues for this, is I'm in 12 leagues that play in the NFBC universe. And, you know, that includes NFBC 50s, includes, you know, the main event, online championship, and it includes Raz Slam and, all that. There is one in 10 of the 12 leagues, I have more pitching points than hitting points. I just did not draft enough hitting. Now, the question is it because did I draft the wrong hitters, or am I not allocating enough early resources to pitching? And that's the next step. I mean, to hitting. That's the next step I have to go through. Except for my very worst team. My very worst team is just this awful NFBC 50 team where I have 10, count them, 10 pitching points total. I mean, it's hard to have 10 pitching points when you have five pitching categories, but I did it. Mission, you know, achievement unlocked. But and almost most of my, even good teams and bad teams, I had all but two leagues, I had way more pitching points than hitting points. Some it's close, like Scarf, I'm really close where I'm winning the league. I've got another one where in the main event where I'm doing well, I'm in second now in that league, not first. I'm probably not going to win it. You know, it's almost always I've got more pitching than hitting. So that's something I have to figure out. Am I better at evaluating pitchers? Is there something I'm missing with hitting? Or is it I'm just not allocating enough? So that's one thing I want to evaluate.
Yeah, I actually have a similar, that was one of my points as well, especially for DCs. Typically my pitching on my DC teams have more points than my hitting. I think mm-hmm. I didn't draft enough hitters on those teams. And in those leagues, you can't pivot, right? And Tout Wars was one for me. Like, I'm sitting, like, I don't know, about fifth in Tout Wars, kind of goes by the day. I move up and down a little bit. And my pitching's great. Like, even this late in the season in a draft champions, my pitching looks better than most people's pitching lineups, you know, on teams where they can make waiver wire moves. Maybe that I've just been lucky in that regard, but my hitting is like so bad, and going back to it, like I had some picks that were just not good, but at the same time, I'm wondering if I put a little too many resources early on in pitching. If I was drafting in a lot of these like two aces and a couple good closers, and it just, and then getting some pitchers to supplement them around maybe rounds 9-10. And yeah, I think I agree with you. You know, I don't want to ignore pitching. We're way past that as a fantasy community, right? 15 years ago, you'd have people say, just wait on pitching. Just load up on bats. Wait on pitching. It's so volatile. You'll figure it out. I think we're way past that now, but I think maybe for myself personally, in some leagues, I swung a little too far
the other direction. Well, and again, it's reading the room, reading what everybody else is doing, and try not to do that. You know, it's easy to say, well, they're drafting it, you know, in the main event, starting pitching inflation. Oh, Dalton Del Don's in my league. Oh, boy, I better get pitching early. No, that's the wrong reaction. because you're competing, you're creating that scarcity for yourself. You're not taking advantage of the opportunity that's been created for you there. And you need to find a way to identify the cheaper pitchers, or find like, okay, I'm going to wait on closers. The main event team, said main event team that's doing well. I didn't take a closer until Scott Barlow in the eighth round, and he's even a half closer at that. And I didn't take another one until like in the 20s somewhere there. I just kept on saying, no, I'm not going to pay that price. And I think I was rewarded for that. The team that's beating me in that league, he was even more of that case. He took three pitchers in the among his first 12 picks. He didn't take a relief pitcher until the 13th round, and then he took David Bednar, who was okay for a while, and then he kind of dropped off. But point being is, he bullied the hitting, and he's crushing the hitting categories in our league. Helps that the first three starters were Buehler, who was good until he got hurt, Verlander and Gilbert. So Verlander and Gilbert have been good all season, and he's had some other good pickups and all that. But point is, like, he really had that strategy, bullied the hitting, took advantage of everybody freaking out about the starting pitching, and closers for that matter too, because it was closer madness this year. And I think maybe there's, when you ignored that panic a little bit, that's when you did well.
Yeah, which actually great segue to, I would say, what my next one that I'll bring up is, was the early closers. I wouldn't say I was at the forefront of that, like in this industry, but I got on board to a degree. Like, I have some Liam Hendricks as a third rounder. Mm-hmm. And then later in draft season, I have some Ryan Pressly as like a fourth rounder. He was fine, but like not great. I know we talked, and so did you and Scott, about how it seemed like every time Ryan Pressly was day to day, the Astros would just rack up save chances, which right. just maybe was unlucky, but he was okay. Hendricks was like okay. Like, he's among the saves leaders, but he wasn't special. Like you're to take a closer in round three, like he better be really good. And then I have some Aroldis Chapman. That's obviously was a huge bust. I don't think I said it on this podcast, but one of my favorite stats, I don't know if it still applies, but as of a couple weeks ago, it still did, is that the trivia question, who has the most saves this year without a blown save? And the answer is Aroldis Chapman. At least it was a couple weeks ago. I haven't bothered to look it up anymore, but which is just fascinating for someone who was such an incredible bust. But
because all of his blowups came in non-save situations.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, it's just remarkable that he lost his job and probably deserved to lose his job. A couple weeks ago, he didn't have a blown save. I think he had like nine saves, and everyone else in the league who had nine or more saves had a blown save. Anyways,
still is 9 for 9 in save chances.
There you go. I think maybe we as an industry, I don't know, felt like maybe got carried away with the closers a little bit, and it feels like when you do it that you're taking the pressure off yourself. You're like, great, I'm just going to draft Liam Hendricks and Aroldis Chapman, or I'm just going to draft, Ryan Pressly and Giovanni Gallegos, and now I'm not going to have to fight for saves, and I'm going to save my resources on the waiver wire and everything. But like, it's a lot of draft capital. And I mentioned this on this podcast a couple weeks ago, that as annoying as chasing saves on the waiver wire is, it may just be a necessary part of being successful in the 2022 landscape. Like, we're not in the early 2000s anymore, where teams have a closer and just use them all the time. And then he gets hurt and they just pivot to their next best reliever and use them all the time. And it's like super predictable back. It was super predictable back then. Like, the best relievers were on a team, not always, but typically were the closers. And again, if the closer got hurt, they'd almost go to the next best reliever and he'd be the new closer. And it just doesn't work like that with a lot of teams anymore. So it's frustrating chasing these saves, but maybe it's actually just part of being successful is finding cheap saves on the waiver wire. Because again, those picks that I used on Hendricks, hey, I could have used them on Whit Merrifield. No, I'm just kidding. Like, maybe I could have used them though on Aaron Judge or Pete Alonso or something like that.
Or a stud starter that was available in the third round. Many different options you could have gone there and just held serve again. Rafael Devers in maybe not third round. That's actually probably a bad comparison point. He's probably, early to mid second round now that I think about it. But, there are many good examples in that area there. So just as a talking point, Starling Marte, late injury notwithstanding, he was a value pick. You're fine with what you got from Shane Bieber there. You're fine with Aaron Nola from there. There are plenty of others. Judge obviously was a huge win in the third round. But if you pushed up Craig Kimbrell to the third round, for instance, as someone did in one of my main event leagues, I'm looking at the board right now.
Gross.
Oh, you know, then right yes, after that, that, that
like that's the that feels like the foolishness looking back on it. It that was aggressive, obviously, even
for Kimbrell.
But like you're taking Craig Kimbrell, who didn't even pitch well last year.
Right. Like just got traded to the Dodgers 2 days before that draft, and I guarantee you that has something to do with it.
I mean, you're taking a guy like that, even if it wasn't the third round, if it was like the fourth round or the fifth round. So say maybe you're passing up on like a George Springer or something like that to try Kimbrell. And I know we need the saves, but and I know no one likes mining the saves on the waiver wire, but we've talked on here about how like you got a few weeks out of Ian Kennedy and then he started to stink again. You jumped off. Like right lately, I've been using Brandon Hughes from the Cubs. Like a little bit, and he's been getting the odd save. He didn't get one tonight. It's really frustrating, but I got a few saves out of him, and I think I paid like $5 for him on the waiver wire. Like maybe this just maybe you need to get a closer, but maybe the rest of it is, you know, part of the battle is just figuring out ways to scrounge for saves all season.
Yeah, agreed. 100% agreed.
Yeah.
Oh, about that there. Yeah. Next mistake for me is a specific player. It's not good when your most rostered player in the NFBC format is no longer your most rostered player later in the season. That for me was Dylan Carlson. I had him in like 7 or 8 NFBC leagues out of a possible 12. I now have him in 3, and those are all like DCs where I can't cut him basically. I thought, you know, this is a guy who is, you know, is in his age 23 season. He was, you know, all the outlets like, yes, he did this. His exit velocity was only 29th percentile, but it was close to league average on fly balls. You know, it was good for – it was 113 WRC plus, impressive for a 22-year-old. Not impressive, but impressive for a 22-year-old. He expected that next step. I projected too much out of him, and I relied on that. And I was spending pretty decent draft capital. We're talking like, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th round in the 15-teamer. And – you know, what I got for him is a 238 average per while I had him, at least 8 homers, 40 RBI, 5 stolen bases, you know, 52 runs. I'm just not enough of anything. And this was, I think this was actually something where I took a shining to a particular player. I liked him and I was willing to overlook his flaws and say, I can project good, you know, a good season, a great season out of him, better than what the estimators are saying. I can beat the field on this one. This is me beating ADP. No, it wasn't. I lost badly.
Yeah, I can see, like, I've fallen victim to that as well. I think of the classic tip in the baseball forecaster about how development isn't often linear, right?
Yes.
I mean, like, we shouldn't write Dylan, like, now Dylan Carlson's a post-hype sleeper for next year.
Probably.
Yeah, it's like that, but that's, I always remember that quote from that book every year that development isn't always linear. And like you said, and I get this, I've done it before too. Like you look at a guy and, you know, like you said, the data, the StatCast data, like it's showing flaws, but you look at his age and you're like, okay, he's a full-time player and he's really young. He's going to improve, but development isn't always linear. And because of those flaws, he's taken a step back this year. Maybe he circles back and eventually takes the step forward, but that doesn't help you for this year. So,
Yeah,
just not automatic. I could see that being a takeaway for sure. Just not automatically assuming that each young player is going to take a step forward because they don't always. Sometimes you do. You hit the Vladimir Guerrero in the breakout season from like right from a year ago, and you get like a league winning type player. But they don't all hit. They don't all improve. It's not like you are X amount of good at 21 and then you're a little better at 22 and a little better at 23 and a little better at 24. So we should evaluate those players maybe more according to the data than just their age.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
So there it goes. Before we get to Fred's next one here, quick note from our sponsors on the Blue Wire Network.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All of our podcasts, indeed, are hosted on the Blue Wire Network, and we thank them for that. Fred, mistake number three. What do you got?
Yeah, so this is I'll kind of spin off your Dylan Carlson one and go with a specific player. Mine would definitely this year be Robbie Grossman. And this again is a little bit like Whit Merrifield. Like I knew it's different, but like I knew Whit Merrifield doesn't fit the profile of an early round player because he's not good enough. Robbie Grossman, I know that I shouldn't trust a past 30-year-old breakout season. Mm-hmm. And I loved Robbie Grossman last year. I had him on so many teams. I thought he was going to have a breakout season, maybe not to the degree he did, but I thought he was going to have a solid season. I took him late in a lot of drafts or picked him up off waivers early last year. 23 homers, 20 steals, like huge season for a guy who was basically right. A waiver wire guy. And coming into this year, it's funny how we spend so long on the projections and I know the rules. Like I know not to buy like a past 30-year-old breakout season, but at the same time, I had such a good vibe on him coming off last year. And I was like, okay, maybe he regresses a bit, but like he's going to be good again. You know, maybe the 23 homers becomes 18, maybe the 20 steals becomes 15, but he's going to be good again this year. And obviously he just totally fell off a cliff, which is not shocking because hasn't been a great player in his career. And this year he's been awful, like 617 OPS. I dropped him months ago. Famously, I've mentioned this on here before, where I took him over Kyle Schwarber in Tout Wars. Yeah. And like, I knew that was a mistake when I did it, but actually if you go back and look at their ADPs from draft season, they're actually not that far apart. Like it wasn't like a terrible, terrible idea, but yeah, that cost me a ton in that league where I don't have enough hitting. Because I'm stuck with Grossman all year. It's a DC. I'm stuck with him all year, and he's not doing anything. And I could have had 40 home runs. So, and my team's light on power. But that one, so, you know, my lesson there is pretty obvious. Like, don't trust the late career breakout season. Project serious regression off those players. And if they happen to repeat it, then good right. for them. But don't pay for it. Because I was paying for him, say, in round, like, 12 in a lot of 15-team leagues. And I was super excited about it. And obviously didn't work out at all.
No, it didn't. That's frustrating there. My next mistake is in a keeper league. It was going for it when the team really wasn't that good sort of trade. got caught up in the moment, thought that I had a chance in the RotoWire Staff Keeper League. I really didn't. And I overpaid. I trade away my top prospects. Now I have to, you know, it's going to slow down the rebuilding process quite a bit. You know, it would have been nice to have a Gunnar Henderson on his first year contract. Yes, it would have been very nice to do that.
Yep.
Chris List was he was on air with us, and he was talking about how he couldn't get a fair deal for a couple of his stud players. And I'm like, well, I'll make you an offer. Like, I had to look at there. Yes, I was in like fifth or sixth place, but fundamentals, I could look at the team and I knew that it was okay. I'm off to a good start, but it's not that great of a team. And I was like, you know what though, I'm going to trade myself into this here, and that's fun. It's fun to go for it. Well, guess what? You got to really make sure that you're ready to go for it there, and I wasn't. And yeah, I'm hurting on that one there. So. Yeah, and it sucks now because I traded away the top players in my farm system. Now I did sell off and I did get, you know, try to start the rebuild process, but I mean, come on. I just cost myself my best prospect, one of the top five prospects in baseball. Ugh, so bad.
Yeah, it's funny how, and I'm not a keeper or dynasty player much, but it's funny how a lot of the things we're talking about so far is about getting enthusiastic behind something when the logic tells you you probably shouldn't, right? Like in this case, it was it was that particular team. Like you said, like if you step back and look at them, you're like, this is probably not a championship roster. I know they're off to a good start, but like if you logically on Robbie Grossman, logically on Whit Merrifield, logically on Dylan Carlson, like some of it's, yeah, where we get our heart into something and you want to believe, right? And I think that's maybe what happened to you there.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So yeah, it's, you know, other leagues, you can make I have another keeper league where I didn't make any trades thinking it was sufficient. I had a big enough lead. I didn't make a trade. My rival, Jeff Bookbinder, who is, I've mentioned him. I'm in a couple leagues with him every year. He introduced me to the guy that started, you know, to Peter Schenke, and we started RotoWire together, introduced me to my wife. I guess that's my gift to him, is I didn't make any go for a trades in that league. So I thought, my team is on the floor. Didn't work out so far. I'm now trailing by 5 points after leading by 10 most of the season.
Oh, any chance to come back or not really?
There's a small pathway there, but yeah, it's not looking great.
Right. Right.
I mean, we got like 10 days. I mean, 9 days left.
Yeah. 9 days left. Yeah. Okay. My next one I'm going to mention, and I don't know if this, so I'm actually interested in looking into this at the end of the season, like between, mm-hmm. when the regular season ends and when I start my projections again, probably in December, I struck out on a lot of pitchers in like the picks, like 100 to 150 range. Mm-hmm. I'd say earlier in draft season, these picks were more like 130 to 170. And then as pitching got pushed up, they were more like 100 to 150. But just to throw some examples out there, I have a lot of Sean Manaea who got off to a good start this season. And then really tailed off. I have a lot of Luis Garcia, and you're going to say Luis Garcia, he had a pretty good season, like, which he was okay.
I mean, it was
like,
good tonight, by the way.
Pardon me?
And good tonight, by the way.
Yeah. So like, he's been fine. Like, but his ERA was 4 like a week or two ago. So like, he hasn't had like a great season. Like he was hurting your team ERA as recently as a couple of weeks ago. I know he's pushed it back down into the 3s. Eduardo Rodriguez was in there. He's been really bad. Frankie Montas, I drafted on a lot of teams. He'd be on the early end of that pick, 100 to 150, but he now has a 4.05 ERA. So he's hurt my
terrible with the Yankees.
I know.
Terrible.
And he's hurt my ERA, and he's hurt. And even he has a 125 whip. That in this era, that hurts your whip. Like most of my teams, their whips are under 1.2. So he's hurting my whip. He has 5 wins. And I know it's like, oh, 5 wins, that's so terrible. But really, we knew going into the season that he was pitching on arguably the worst team in baseball with the A's. I mean, they're not going to finish last, but they're right down there. We knew wins would probably be a problem. And sure enough, on the A's, 19 starts, he pitched really well. He got 4 wins. So like we kind of saw that coming. I'm interested to look at pitchers. Like, I haven't decided exactly how I'm not going to do this probably for an article. So I'll just do it for my own knowledge, but I am interested in looking at pitchers, say dividing them up. Let's just say randomly the first 10 by ADP and how many dollars they earned on average, the next 10, the next 10, et cetera. And I'm interested to see if pitchers who went in that Manaea, Garcia, Eduardo Rodriguez range if they were good values or if in general they weren't good values. Like, I did miss on Manoah. He's
paid up for Manoah though.
He's kind of in the front end of that range, like around where Montas was. Mm-hmm. I missed it. I have a little bit of McClanahan. He was kind of, again, at the front end of that range. You want to throw in a big bust on the front of that range is Jose Berríos. Another bad start tonight. Like, he was just a killer, and I have him on a couple teams. So I'm interested. I have typically, in all the years I've played fantasy, I've actually typically avoided that range for starting pitchers. I usually get them early, and I get them late, and I pound hitting in that range because I find hitters in that range are still lineup regulars, not much chance of losing their job. You know, a lot of different skill sets to target, depending on what you need. This year, I liked a bunch of the pitchers in that range, such as Manaea and Garcia and Montas. And so I went after them, kind of changed my strategy. I don't like how it turned out. And I think that helped impact the bad hitting.
Because I don't think this was a structural problem. I think this is you got the wrong pitcher's problem.
Maybe.
So I'm just going by, and this is an ADP. This is just one draft. I'm looking at the grid. So Berríos is the start of that range at 5.4. Disaster. Absolutely. Trevor Rogers was a disaster at 5.12. Uh-huh. Kevin Gausman at 5.15, you're perfectly fine with. Carlos Rodon at 6.3, you're fine with. Good. Lance Lynn, okay, that was a problem.
Disaster.
Alex Manoah, I got him in the sixth round. Very happy. There's Montas. Okay, problem. Yu Darvish, very happy. Charlie Morton, you're pretty good with. Shane McClanahan, very happy. Chris Bassett, you're very happy. Blake Snell, surprisingly, you're probably okay with, even though you didn't think you were going to be.
Yeah.
Erod, okay. Kershaw, happy. Logan Gilbert, happy. Pablo Lopez, Luis Garcia, those guys were in the eighth. That's a little early than what Garcia was going earlier in the draft season, but it's just, my point is it's mixed results. I don't think it's really a systemic problem. I think it's you have to get the right pitcher. Framber Valdez at the very end of that range, Manaea at the very end of that range. They give you contrast there.
If you go a little further, who do they say the next two or three?
Okay, Evaldi, Tyler Mahle.
I have a lot of him.
Yeah, that didn't work out. Patrick Sandoval was pushed up in this league, so it's probably not a good example. Yeah. Sonny Gray, he had his moments, but then he always came up small at other moments. Ian Anderson, utter disaster. And then it's just there's a big blank. There's not a whole lot of pitchers going then after
that. So I was kind of counting in my head as you were going through them, and you're right. The good pick to bad pick ratio was pretty good for a while, and then it kind of tails off around where we got to Manaea. There's a bunch of them in that group.
That was a good time to pound hitting, by the way.
Absolutely. So
that's where I got Dansby and Adamas. Yeah, that was nice.
So maybe that's just a 1 year blip where there's a group of a half a dozen pitchers there, and most of them robust. Mm-hmm. Anyways, like I said, I think the reason it bothers me is it isn't typical for how I've been building my pitching staffs for 20 years. Like I said, I'm usually early and late on starting pitching and not much in the middle. I'll reevaluate it and see what I think. And that's why I wanted to kind of do what you did, except I'll just go over to RotoWire and grab dollar values for all those players.
Right.
And take a look at
it versus ADP. So main event ADP, if you want to do it by that, or do it by 12 team ADP. I mean, you can do both, and that's the fun thing. You can do that, and maybe you can even isolate for a certain date range. The NFBC's tools there on the ADP tools are phenomenal. Just so good.
Yeah.
As far as that goes. Yeah. All right. Before I share my next mistake, it was a mistake. A quick note from our friends at So Rare. So Rare MLB is an NFT based free-to-play baseball game played with officially licensed Major League Baseball cards. Sign up today at sorare.com/MLB, and you'll receive 13 common cards to start your collection. Build 7-player lineups from cards in your collection and play weekly competitions with scoring based on real-life player performance. Compete for rewards with other fans around the world. For more information on gameplay and to sign up, visit sorare.com/MLB. There's no better time to join Sorare than ahead of our postseason gameplay. We're going to be talking with the folks from Sorare next Thursday in our last Thursday Outside Guest podcast. So looking forward to that one there. I'm going to try to play their postseason game. I think it should be a lot of fun when I don't have 7,000 other leagues to play in. So that'll be nice. All right, my next mistake. I've got religion on not stashing injured guys. Don't do it. don't get injury optimism. Yes. Scott Pietnowski's right. Then I was the guy that drafted Tatis in the Vegas main, where I famously bragged about getting him later than anybody else.
Yay.
At least I spent an 11th round pick on him, but yeah, it didn't work out. And I replaced him with Wander Franco, who is just finally starting to hit, but it's fits and starts. I'm still not even getting full mileage off of that, but I just didn't. I learned a lesson, then I need to relearn it. Don't be doing the stashes. It's just there are times when it works out, and there's times when it works out with prospects, but more often than not, especially in these leagues where you don't have DL spots, IR spots, man, it costs too much draft capital and too much roster capital.
Yeah, injury optimism is not your friend. I actually just wrote a lessons learned from 2022 article for Yahoo about a week ago, and that was one of them. It wasn't my personal lessons learned. It was just general fantasy lessons learned. And yeah, I mean, DeGrom and Tatis were the headliners on that. Like, they were both in draft season. We were talking like, hey, they could be back in June, maybe by the start of July at the latest. And DeGrom came back in early August. Tatis was probably looking at mid-August if it wasn't for the suspension. Yeah, just chasing injured players. Once in a while, it works out. It generally, I think, the rule of thumb has to be, take his expected return date, add a few weeks to it, and then see where he comes out in your rankings. Like, if you took, and then you just probably won't end up getting him. But if you had taken the DeGrom, which was a very loose timeline when we drafted, right, if you had said, well, people are talking like late June, I'm going to add a month to that. Tatis, people are talking like late June, I'm going to add a month to that. You probably just wouldn't have ended up with them once you projected them out. But at least if you did end up with them, you would have invested so little in them. Maybe it would have made more sense. But yeah, injury optimism is, that adds to what we've been talking about a lot tonight. You know, optimism is generally, optimism in the face of logic is usually not your friend.
No, it sure isn't. Yeah. And and the thing is, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to be on Tatis this year. Like, am I going to do the damn thing? I did the damn thing. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. All right. Last one for you. Last mistake by Fred Zinke. Unless you want to add more.
I'm going to go with, I'm deciding between two. I think one mistake that I think is a big one for me that I want to learn from is I kind of dismissed good players who don't steal bases in the early rounds because they just like weren't part of the plan.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter how good Yordan Alvarez was as a hitter or Aaron Judge. I wasn't that totally into those guys because they also had some injury concerns, right? Like Judge had been a little injury prone in his career going into this year. Alvarez, like, had earlier in his career had some injury problems. But I'll give you a good one for me was Pete Alonso. So I really liked Pete Alonso going into this season. And I was like, oh, he just doesn't really fit the plan. Mm-hmm. He doesn't steal bases, and I want to get steals and I want to get starters early, and I got to get these early closers because everyone's getting early closers. So I just don't have room to draft Pete Alonso. So I'll just get my first baseman later. Huh. And I do get that, like, first baseman, there are some plenty of good first basemen, but I mean, come on. Like, I couldn't have used Pete Alonso this year on a lot of my teams and all those home runs and all those RBIs. So I think I need to be more open to different types of builds and to the concept, especially in standalone leagues, that, you know, if someone like Pete Alonso comes out really high in my projections, go ahead and take him. Be a little bit light on steals.
Right.
Like, figure that out later in your draft. Figure it out on the waiver wire. There's Jake McCarthy's out there. There's John Birdie's out there. Like, you could figure some of this stuff out. Like, just get good players who you believe in. So I'm going to try to be more open-minded to different types of builds. The last few years, I've been very locked in on, if I'm taking a hitter in about the first five rounds, like, he needs to contribute at least a double-digit steals total. And I want to move off that a little bit.
I think that's right. I mean, I think at some point, I'm going to follow that up with my mistake, which is, okay, you don't have to get it in those early rounds, but you have to get it, and you got to have a plan.
Yep.
XFL, another keeper league, keepers, quasi dynasty, quasi keeper. We have salaries, but you don't have to do long-term contracts. You can only keep 15 players, but you can keep minor leaguers in. Mm-hmm. Guys you draft as minor leaguers only go up $3 a year. So essentially you're keeping in perpetuity. If I have a league, you know, this in XFL, I've got like Vlad and Soto super cheap, right? And I added a bunch of good hitters. However, I missed on Tommy Edman in the draft. I knew that I was like, he was one of those stolen base targets. Like, all right, who am I going to settle for? I didn't really have a plan. Like, okay, I need to get this category. And when you're in a keeper league, you can't punt a category. You can, I suppose, but very difficult to do. I have a good team. I made all sorts of go for it trades, but I have 2 points in stolen bases in a 15 team league. Just an absolute albatross on my team. Can't have that. And I do. And so that I think I felt like, you know, I didn't have enough of a plan there. Didn't really set it up right. I missed on my one target that I thought, okay, he'd be perfect for this team. If I don't, you know, and I thought, okay, there's this other guy that could be perfect for this team. I didn't get either of them. And like, okay, well, I'll settle. You know, Trent Grisham, I can project him to, you know, I'm going to will him into having a good season. It didn't work out.
No, you were not able to do that. You're right. This is what makes steals so maddening is, and I think my approach to steals was similar to my approach in some of the leagues and a lot of people's approach to closers. It was, I'll just get them early and then I don't have to worry about them.
Right.
Because they dry up and they disappear. Closers, get them early. There are a lot of teams like the Reds who don't use a closer.
Right. It's fear that drives us. Absolutely. Right.
So I'm going to start my draft. I'm going to get a guy like Whit Merrifield and I'm going to get another guy who steals some bases and, you know, a couple guys who steal bases. And then I'm going to get an ace and then I'm going to get a couple closers who are really good. And then I don't have to worry about saves. I don't have to worry about steals. And I can just attack the other categories the rest of the way, which is like a really cool plan when your draft finishes. But then later in the season, when one of those closers has gone belly up and then one of these base stealers has gone belly up, and then you're like, oh great. And now I don't have any steals waiting to compensate for that because I thought I had my steals sorted out. I don't have any relievers to help with that. So I think it's the same kind of feeling as it's comforting to feel. It's comforting to come out of. We talked about in our labor league, I started with Jose Ramirez, went well, Teoscar, and Whit Merrifield. I had a second pick. I just happened to remember that draft because I did it early, so it's kind of isolated in my mind. And I remember coming out of that saying, oh, I've got like whatever, 65 steals, 70 steals between those three guys. Well,
right. Oops.
Didn't quite work out that way, did it? Yeah. In a kind of mid-place team, that felt reassuring. And then, you know, I also took some relievers. Adding into the relievers early, Rizal Iglesias. There was another one who went early, and then, you know, didn't turn out very well. Because he got traded. But anyways, and he was on that team. I felt like I had locked up the steals early and the saves early, and I really hadn't. Like, it was just me feeling comforted. In hindsight, I probably should have drafted better players early, overall baseball players early, and then been, like you say, you have to have a steals plan, but maybe part of that plan is battling throughout the season.
Yep, exactly.
There are Bubba Thompsons out there. I know I named Birdie. I named Jake McCarthy. Bubba Thompson's another guy who, Nate Eaton right now. Like, these guys are stealing a couple bases a week. So they're available, and they were not expensive on the waiver wire down the stretch.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right. So it goes. We had a couple other things on your list. Some of those were specific players. Some of this is, I think the other categorical possible error that you alluded to was the players who signed late. Maybe that we as a group overrated them. Maybe we, underrated how hard it was for them to get going. Trevor Story, Nick Castellanos. And just, you know, guys that sign in their, the guys that signed, you know, the contract year guys, and you're one of their contract. Well, maybe you avoid them. Now, I'll say this, that Marcus Semien appeared to be one of those guys and was much better in the second half. He signed early, though. Same with Corey Seager. They both signed before the lockout. So maybe it's post-lockout guys. I don't know.
I know Freddie Freeman signed fairly late, right?
True.
So it wasn't all of them, but. And I don't think that one I decided not to, when you said to name one more, I decided, well, I don't think I'll pick that one because I don't think it's going to be as much of a thing the next couple years. We'll see. We'll see how the free agent market moves. But I am going to try to remember that if we're drafting labor in February and there are still a few guys unsigned, Eddie Rosario is another one, just awful season. He signed late. I know he's not a superstar player, but
had a vision problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. His didn't. Yeah. Everything went poorly for him, but I am going to remember that. I don't think it'll be as much of a thing, but I think again, this is enthusiasm. Like Trevor Story signs with the Red Sox and you're like, hey, that's a pretty good fit for a guy leaving Coors Field. It's probably about as good as we can get. Okay, I'm in. I'm back in on him. You know, Nick Castellanos signs with the Phillies. Okay, good park. Pretty solid lineup. Okay, I'm back in. But
yeah, let me ask you this. Are you going to be taking the discount on both of them next year, though?
I think too early for me to say. On Castellanos, I think more likely. We'll see, because I feel like he could be really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Story, I'm going to have to dive in on him a little more, okay, because maybe I just don't want post-Coors Story. Also, I feel, I don't know, I'll have to look at it. He also battled injuries, I felt like, off and on all season, or a lot of the season. He kind of got off to a slow start and then battled injuries off and on throughout the season. So I'll have to decide if I think that my conclusion on that is he's going to be injury prone next year, or if the conclusion is maybe he could come back off that and get a good off season and have a healthier season next year. So, maybe more likely Castellanos than Story, because I think Castellanos would be a lot cheaper.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll go back to those pre-Reds prices, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And he was a good hitter for several years, right, before this year.
Yeah. I think year two of these kind of, I think that's a thing. I think Harper, Machado are good examples of guys that bounce back in year two. Lindor's another one. He didn't sign a free agent contract necessarily, but he got traded because of the contract, signed a big extension, blah, blah, blah. Had the bad year, then bounced back this year, had a very good year. I think that is a thing. I think that is possible. So I'll be looking forward to some of that this year. That may be a subject of off-season article. We'll see about that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we're going to keep this a little shorter, guys. We got one more next week with Fred and I together. But I'm off to update the value meter, so off we go. And Fred, thanks for doing the late night Zinke After Dark podcast.
Yeah, no problem. My alarm to get up for work in the morning goes off in a little under 5 hours. So I'll be bleary eyed at work tomorrow, but it's all worth it. It's like, it's good to talk baseball late at night.
Exactly. And I have a similar early alarm to go see my dad at the hospital. So we'll be doing the same thing there. All right. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I got the Prospect Pod with James tomorrow. And then, of course, Todd is going to be stepping in for me on Thursday this week. We have a very special guest, a young up-and-coming guy named Ron Chandler, is going to be joining us on the podcast, Todd and Ron. So should be a lot of fun. Tune in for that. Thanks for listening to the RotoWire Baseball Podcast. Take care.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.